This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. The Johor State elections took place last week, in which Barisan Nasional came out the victor with a 2/3 majority. Now, the most alarming statistic of the Johor elections, though, is the voter turnout at 54%. So why did 45% of the adult population in Johor decide not to participate? Joining me on the show today to discuss all of this and more regarding voter turnouts and some of the initiatives they've been doing is Kira Yusri. She's the co-founder of Undi 18. Welcome to the show, Kira. So Undi 18 were down in Johor for the elections. What were you guys up to and what was the experience like?
Thanks for having me again. Yeah, so this is the first election where I think as an organization, we brought our whole gang down just to like check it out. Mm-hmm. As you know, majority of my teammates are young people ourselves. Many of them are first time voters or have never voted before. So it's a really interesting experience. And I think the main goal is that we wanted to sort of like run a get out to vote campaign because we knew, and I think we saw it coming, that, you know, with the political instability, with COVID, there is going to be a very high level of voter apathy and fatigue. And this is a real concern that I don't see enough political parties or government taking it seriously. So we decided that, okay, let's just go on the ground. I mean, we're a very small-time NGO and we've been running online programs in the past 2 years because of the pandemic. So we figured there's no better way to get a picture than to go down to the ground. And that's what we were doing in Johor. Primarily, we were focusing on launching a campaign called Undi Johor. Mm-hmm. Under Undi 18, we've launched two regional campaigns before, Undi Sabah and Undi Sarawak. And actually, those two campaigns have seen past two state elections as well, the Sabah state elections and the Sarawak state elections. So this time, we wanted to sort of like replicate the spirit, but with an additional twist because of how unique Johor voter landscape is about. So I'm mm-hmm. sure you know that for Johorians, the unique part about it is that a large number of them, young people especially, live outside of Johor.
Right.
You know, it's very common for state beyond Klang Valley. You have students traveling to and they stay in universities. There are many young professionals, you know, going either abroad or working in Singapore, especially, or working in KL, Sabah and Sarawak. So we figured, okay, how do we sort of like facilitate and ensure their voices are still heard? Which is how we came about with the Undi Johor initiative. The main idea was to do two things in particular. Mm-hmm. The first one being a Pulang Mengundi campaign. So we launched a public fundraiser, tabung so to say, to fundraise and provide subsidies and aid for Johoran youth to return back to vote. I think in that aspect we fundraised, we managed to provide a subsidy amount up to 5,000 plus ringgit to various youth.
Right.
To purchase bus tickets, train tickets, plane tickets to come back. Because you need to understand that the state election was held literally a few weeks after Chinese New Year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for Malaysians, if you are made chuti to balik kampung already, your boss is probably not going to let you take another holiday to come back.
Right.
And not to mention, if you're a young person working in Singapore, it's like a double layer of, inaccessibility when it comes to election. Which brings me to our second initiative under the Undi Johor project. Which was the Undi Post, Ops Undi Post, right?
Mm.
So, in brief, in a very crude manner, what essentially was that we are manually bringing back votes from Singapore to Johor, and we help them cast their votes. Of course, we cannot help them pangkah or cross the ballot paper.
Yep.
But what we did was that, you know, we ran, tutorials and campaigns to get people to register as postal voter. Because if I'm not mistaken, the number of, overseas, postal voter for the Malacca elections, was 500. So pretty dismal if you ask me. And I think I fully blame the Election Commission for not being proactive in promoting the change in the law.
Mm.
Because prior to COVID, prior to the pandemic, right, you actually, Malaysians in Johor, Southern Thailand, Brunei and Kalimantan could not do postal voting because they were deemed near enough to travel back. But with COVID and borders not opening, it is true injustice if they're not allowed to do postal voting. So for the Johor elections, we didn't want the same situation to happen, especially when we knew there were 200,000 Johorians residing in Singapore. And of course, with Undi 18 and automatic voter registration, all of them are voters, right?
Right.
However, there is an extra layer where you must register as a postal voter. And that's what we were encouraging people to do. That's what our campaign was about. Later on, about a week before elections, we mobilized about 39 volunteers in Singapore themselves. Some of them are students, some of them are working professionals, some of them are even kopitiam owners. And you know, Singapore is kopitiam. It's pretty legendary. Yeah. So they became great drop-off points for Malaysians. And it was really inspiring to see, the solidarity and the collective effort, of the Malaysians in Singapore to, collect and gather the votes. So I think until the day before elections, we actually collected almost 4,000 ballots, which is more than half of the registered postal voters in Singapore. I think it was reported to be about 7,000, almost 7,000 plus minus people that registered for Singapore alone. And we collected and delivered about 4,000. So, you know, because it can be quite unreliable to only hope that the postal service will deliver your votes. And we even had word from our friends in Singapore that some of their votes arrive on election day or some of their votes arrive after election day. So, you know, this is a gap that's has been brought up again and again, but, you know, EC has never been proactive enough to counter it. But yeah, so I think in that sense, it was really inspiring. And then we were, you know, we were waiting at Larkin Central, the bus station on the VTL. Waiting for the VTL bus to come in, and then the guy was like, okay, these are the votes. And then we were like, wow, like, you know, this is like such a huge responsibility. We realized, right?
Yeah.
Cause this is literally people's trust and hope that we will deliver. So we brought it back to our sorting center. We have volunteers here as well. I think about 35 of us that was, sorting, allocating, tagging, and then also delivering, the voters, the votes, to the respective, returning officers as what the rules say.
Now, like you mentioned, you know, y'all brought up more than half of the registered postal voters, their ballots, y'all brought it back. And that is incredible, right? But when you look at the number of registered voters, right, which is, I mean, registered postal voters is about 7,000. Do you think this is a good number? What are your thoughts on the way that, you know, because you mentioned that the previous elections, like you put full blame on the EC. What about this time around? Do you think the EC did enough to you know, was there adequate publicity and time allocated for people overseas to register to vote and things like that, their postal? Do you think it was done better than previous elections?
Absolutely not. I think we have been quite consistent in calling out the EC in their lack of urgency and also the lack of proactiveness in overcoming the barriers, these electoral barriers. And I don't see the urgency from them to actually make elections inclusive. Because actually postal voting is not even the best way to get people to cast their votes if they're abroad. The best way, actually, you know, one of the recommendations made by civil society is early or advanced voting. Right. You increase the number of days for voting so that people are not limited to just 8 a.m. on 5 to 5 p.m. on a Saturday. Right. It's such a limiting, time, and it makes no sense, for that to happen. And not to mention, if you are abroad, I don't see a reason why we cannot vote at our embassy or consulate, or the High Commission, because once again, we've done it before. So unless there is, you know, I don't want to speculate, but unless there is another reason why we want to make voting inaccessible, I don't know why the EC has not been more proactive or taken steps to actually make it easier for people to vote. And I think, especially considering that we have a huge increase of voters, I mean, as you can see in the Johor PRN, but also in an upcoming GE, it will be much, much harder. There will be so many postal ballots to be mailed out. You know, and you can't just rely on NGOs and volunteers to coordinate and to amplify the message, right? So when I was in Johor for 2 weeks, you know, speaking about how EC's job is to promote the elections, I think I was driving around like at least a good maybe 10 constituencies I drove past to observe, you know, as part of the team. I think I can count in there. I saw less than 10 banners by SPR announcing that there is an election. Especially when you go to rural areas like Felda settlement and all that, right? People don't know that there are elections because there's no information is not accessible.
Right.
Information is not publicized. So how does the EC measure its success of its work, really? You know, that's the question I have. Is it putting out a media statement? Because you know for a fact that this information do not go down to the ground. So I was very shocked to hear not just people not knowing about their voter registration status or that they actually are not qualified to vote, but they don't even know the elections are happening. And I think that's a very big concern that we need to be talking about. And, you know, I think not just the NGOs, but political parties must also pressure the EC to do better, especially when we have a general election coming.
Is it just the EC, or is there something more that we, when I say we, I mean like NGOs, the media, etc., are we not doing something enough?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always on the perspective that, you know, NGOs and, you know, non-government organizations, even with media, is that we are trying to fill the gap that the government has, right? So, of course, I mean, for Undi Itin, the NGO, we've been trying our best to do voter education for the past 5 years, you know, and obviously we have troubles in meeting every single young person in the country, you know, that's a very high order. And there's a reason why we have ministries and the Ministry of Sports, the Ministry of Education, you know, that whose job is to literally educate the public. So I think, of course, when you have a legislative change as large as Undi Itin, it is not just one party's responsibility or the other. So why, however, I pressure the EC is that because this is literally their mandate, which is to execute elections and to make it accessible. So I think part of it being an NGO and civil society is also pressuring in the institutions responsible for this and demand them to do their jobs. You know, and I think, however, of course, for Undi Itin also, we've been, you know, reflecting and thinking that, you know, we need to also drastically change the way we work and investing in going down to the ground. Because it's always a lot more costlier to go down to the ground than to run online programs, than to run media campaigns. I mean, social media campaigns, right? So I think this is where we need to have a larger collaboration. You know, I believe in like working with local partners. For example, outside of KL, you know, you have great organizations like ABIM who have chapters and roots in every state, every kampong, every daerah. And it's important to tap into them. And I also think Undi Itin, I mean, and not just Undi Itin as an NGO, but any NGO that's interested to do voter education, because I think now it is a responsibility of everyone, you know, is to engage political parties. We cannot alienate ourselves, because I don't think when it comes to voter education, you need to be nonpartisan. The right idea is that you need to be bipartisan. You need to introduce and engage the political parties, because they are the ones, you know, that will actually benefit from better voter education or better political literacy. So we need to involve them as stakeholders in this process. And I think, speaking personally from Undi Itin, I think that's the focus that we will have. So I'm hoping that elections won't come so soon, so we do have time to prepare the general public. Because I think another reason that with the low voter turnout, especially when you contrast the numbers with Undi Itin AVR numbers, is that the elections happen very quickly after the implementation. So there's actually very little time for even people to be aware of, you know. I mean, you know, political literacy don't happen overnight. This is why I keep telling people. Just because you change the law, you can't expect the entire country to suddenly know the difference between political ideologies, be able to understand policies. It's a process. It's a process. And especially when it comes to cultural change, it takes time. So we have to keep doing the work and believe that, you know, the work is worthwhile. And then we have to focus on engaging as many people as possible.
On the show with me today is Kira Yusri, co-founder of Undi Itin. After the break, I ask her about youth specifically, especially 18 to 21-year-olds. Did they come out in droves to participate in the Johor elections, or did they sit it out? We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Kira Yusri. She's the co-founder of Undi Itin, and we're discussing youth participation and poor voter turnout at the Johor state elections. Let's talk about the voter turnout. I want to focus on the general voter turnout before sort of honing in on the youth participation part. Thanks to automatic voter registration, we now get to see true numbers of Malaysians who participate in elections. Because prior to this, you know, whatever, when we say percentage of voter turnout, we're talking about percentage of those registered. So if in GE14 we had 80% voter turnout, it means 80% from those who went out to register in the first place. If you go out to register in the first place, you're probably already somewhat interested in politics. But now everyone, if you're an adult above 18, you're a voter. And it was the voter turnout was only slightly more than 50% and about 54-55%. Why is it so low? What are some of the reasons given by people who didn't go out to vote? Is it a COVID issue, or is it more like they looked at the political parties and they said, this is not for me?
Yeah, so I don't have actual like survey data to work from. So I'll just speak frankly from my engagements with the people I could talk to, right? So I was, I spoke to voters, I spoke to the police officers that were manning the booth, and also some of the pegawai tugas SPR when I was on the ground. And I think the general vibe, oh, I'm such a young person, I think vibe, general vibe or mood that's being discussed around and felt on the ground is that people are tired of politics, you know, because, and they don't, and I think this is also, so tired of politics lead to voter apathy, which leads to, the lack of interest in coming out to vote, right? And that's one thing that, one area of concern. Another area that's very concerning is that people don't understand why a state election is happening, you know, because we are very used to the idea of elections happening once every 5 years, you know, and in the case of Johor specifically, there was no withdrawal of support. You know, like Sheraton move, so to say, there was no, it wasn't like Sarawak, for example, where it's time to have a state election. You cannot delay any longer. You know, it wasn't like Sabah where, you know, number of aduns hop over. So people could see the process. I feel like with the Johor elections, you know, for people who were not observing politics, it's like, tiba-tiba suddenly, there's elections. So for them, it's like, why is the elections now when it's not general elections? So they were like, so I bet many people also who said that, oh, I mean, if I don't vote now, I'll just vote later lah, during GE.
Right.
And then we had to say, oh no, this is a state election. And that when you vote at a federal level, a federal election, you choose your MP, not your ADUN. And then you realize people don't even understand the differences between MP and ADUN. So this is, I think, the bigger problem, which is, people don't understand, our legislative process. People don't understand, it's like a voter education, like people don't understand how our representatives work and what are the processes to put them in those positions, because, there is so little participation, political participation in general public if you are not interested in politics, that it's so hard to comprehend why there is a state election. So I think that is actually, you know, maybe, I hope that, you know, research centers will do proper research on understanding the sentiments. But I think, you know, because people just don't understand the gravity of the election, you know, because the election SOPs have been changed since the Malacca election, you allow ceramah now, you know, you allow people to do walkabouts and things like that. So previously for Malacca, they were not allowing that. So it's very weird that people still are not hyped about elections when usually, I don't know if you remember, I mean, for GE, it was my first time voting. Right. Everybody was talking about elections. It was so exciting. It was so hyped. Even if you don't understand politics, you have to talk about politics. But you don't see that this time around. So I think that's quite concerning.
Right. And do you think this is in part due to political parties not courting or just not being inspiring enough to galvanize the voters to come out? Because I'm wondering what needs to be done by the political parties to court the remaining 45% of the people who are not voting, who are tired, who don't understand politics, who are perhaps just fatigued by politics. What needs to be done to court them to come out and vote?
I think political parties need to really re-strategize how they engage voters. Because even look at, you know, our supposedly hottest new party, MUDA, right? Even in the areas that they're contesting in, which, you know, overall have a mix of urban and rural, areas, the turnout is quite low as well. You know, which is quite concerning. Although it is consistent across all, seats. But however, all of us, I think for people who follow politics, you assume that, okay, we have a, you know, hot young contender, and then you think that will rile up the people, but it's still the same across the board. So what actually is needed to be done, to get young people out, or even people in general, to increase voter turnout? I think we need to really relook at, like, you know, what are the issues that young people do care about? And in a sense, how do we actually prove to them that these are also issues the political parties care about beyond just wrestling for power? I think for many people, the understanding of politics is just about who is the one in power. And I don't blame them, because that's how we've been, we grow up thinking about that, right? So I think if we want to talk about new politics, we want to talk about, like, you know, moving forward, and if everyone is genuinely concerned about voter turnout, that's an area that we need to really look into. is that how do we actually get people interested to participate in our elections again? And that can come in a form of like, you know, I know I've seen parties engaging youth through esports, through games. I've seen, you know, well, depending where you are, sometimes, you know, they hold forums and conferences, but are these enough? I think those are the questions that political parties need to ask themselves and, you know, really come up with a new plan before general election. Otherwise, we will probably see similar trends as the Johor state election.
Right. Now, I want to, you brought up a very interesting point about, you know, how even in seats where Muda contested, not many you know, the general voter turnout was just similar across the board. Mm. It seems like not many young people really like came out to vote in large numbers, right? And I want to hone in on that because we, you know, the disclaimer is we don't have the exact numbers yet. We're still waiting for the numbers by the EC and all to see exactly how many young people came out in specifically and which party did they vote for, maybe, and things like that. We will only see in the days to come.
Yeah.
But in general, it seems like while there are some, there are a number of constituencies in which, let's say 18 to 21 year olds, did come out to vote, in large numbers. In many other constituencies, it seems like that wasn't the case. This is all anecdotally. What are your thoughts on youth participation specifically at the Johor elections, especially 18 to 21 year olds?
I think for 18 to 21 year olds, I also, I noted that because I was observing the Saluran's
right.
elections, and the turnout for the Saluran 456, which is generally for young voters, was very, very low compared to the earlier Saluran.
Mm-hmm.
I think for young people, I think we don't understand perhaps the gravity of and the impact of our vote. You know, the consequences or the impact that we can have through our votes, because I mean, universally, young people, the younger generation, voter turnout will always be lower than the older generation, except in the case of 2018 elections, which probably is the reason why we have an outlier result,
right.
during 2018, GE. So I think there needs to be a huge shift in terms of, in our culture, you know, something that can encourage even the people on the fence, even the people who are apathetic, to actually be interested in politics. Because I think for young people, the fundamental thing is that, you know, if my friend is doing it, okay, I want to be part of it as well. I want to be a part of this process,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's also the reason why, for example, when Muda launched, they have a huge wave of new registrations, many of them young people, many of them school students or university students. Because it's such a good feeling when you have a community that you feel it can belong to. But unfortunately, you know, it doesn't translate to the ballot box later on, which is a concern that I think, you know, we need to deep dive into and understand why even with NGOs, with media, new political parties cannot galvanize young voters. You know, I think that's the real concern here, lah. And I think what needs to happen is that we need to understand young voters better. I mean, probably before this, you know, we haven't had many chances to poll young people or to survey them. And I think, of course, there was never a need to, right? Because they were not stakeholders, they were not voters.
Mm-hmm.
But now that their votes matter, their voices matter, we need to take the time and actually understand their perspective and figure out what issues concern them. And I mean, of course, I guess in the Johor state election, it happened too quickly, so we can't do that comprehensively. But I hope that, you know, for general election, is that, you know, we all take the time to actually listen to them and figuring out what are the pain points they have, what are their aspirations, and then how do we actually get them to take action on those feelings and translate them into votes, no matter who they're voting for.
Yeah. Speaking of, do you think there was enough effort when we look at, let's say, the manifestos, even if it's not manifestos, the messaging, the overall messaging by political parties, do you think they did enough to hone in on issues faced by young people, especially like 18 to 21s or even like those 21 to 30 years old, fresh graduates and things like that? Do you think political parties did enough to really highlight these issues?
I think political parties try their best to come up with manifestos sometimes within a week, because
right.
election campaigns are just like that. So I tend to not judge a quality of the political party just purely on a manifesto they have to whip up within a week. I don't think that's fair. I think what's fair is to look at a track record on how they treat young people, how they treat issues of minimum wage, what have they said so far on issues of access to education, refugee rights, migrant workers, and things like that. I think looking at a political party's or politician's track record on issues, I think will give us a better indicator than oftentimes populist manifestos that, you know, probably don't even have enough data or research to back it up. And honestly, I can't even blame them for that, right? Because you don't have time. But I think, just speaking of, I don't think I deep dive into all the manifestos by all the political parties, but I don't think many of them, maybe besides BN, that actually highlighted youth as a target focus. I don't think so. I could be wrong though, but if I'm not, I think, but of course BN had the privilege of being the incumbent, so they can specifically outline monetary support, welfare, and things like that, you know. So,
right.
So again, does that mean that they are better or not? I think that's up to the voters to decide, right? But I think it's too much to expect voters to, especially people who are not familiar with policy making or policy decisions. So I think fundamentally, whatever manifesto you come up, it's about how you communicate them to the public and how do you communicate to the voters. There's no point having a super complicated buku manifesto and people don't understand what's going on. So I think that's the focus that political parties should have. Like, good to have a manifesto with specific outlines of policy ideas and such, but it's really about the communications and how do you convince that, okay, if we say we want to develop this area or whatever, how will it actually benefit me as a 21-year-old voter? And how does it also benefit my 51-year-old mother? So I think that's the challenge, but the real question here when it comes to manifestos and policy promises.
Certainly. Just a couple more questions before we wrap up. I want to get your quick thoughts on election results as a whole. Barisan Nasional won a two-thirds majority, but I think it's worth highlighting that they won a two-third majority with a 43% vote share. This is not something new, but it seems to be like a lot of people are starting to talk about that on social media as well. What are your thoughts on the election results?
I mean, I think this point comes up always by people who lose the election. Suddenly, everyone who lose the election is so passionate about reforming our electoral system to think beyond first past the post. Some, you know, no one thought about this when in 2018, no one thought about this when we win. Winners of elections never think about it, reforming the electoral system, which I find very ironic. So I think, of course, the fundamental problems of first past the post, that it rewards, it doesn't necessarily rewards winners of election, it punishes the losers. I think this is a quote I learned from Professor Wong Chin Huat when I learned about this the first time. So it is definitely, I think, I don't want to use the word unfair either, because it is a system that we have. It is not illegal. It is not an illegal win. It's entirely legitimate, right? Mm-hmm. Similar to Sheraton Wolf. Everyone don't like it. Many people are angry about it, but it is legitimate. So it comes to the question that now institutional reforms actually affect bread and butter issues, right? So to all the politicians that think institutional reforms are not issues Marhain, are not the rakyat's problems, when it affects you, now suddenly you're like, oh, we must reform this, we must look into this, which I always welcome, of course. But these ideas and these demands must also be presented when you are government, you know? So I think, I don't want to say that, just because Barisan had like 40-something percent of the popular vote, it means that they don't deserve to be government. I don't think so, because they work within the system that they have, within the limitation that we have, and they want the votes needed to become government. And I think, of course, when it comes to first past the post, if you want to defeat the incumbent, a united opposition is needed. And I don't want to comment on political parties specifically, but I think people could see that there's a lack of unity, and probably a reason why the vote is split in that manner, you know. So I think if we are serious about, trying to, imagine a Malaysia where a coalition don't have a super majority or two-thirds majority that easily, we have to really re-strategize and think, how do we provide, how do we actually come together and work within a system that we have? Because currently the system is what it is, and do better lah.
And I think you brought up a good point about how, yes, we need to question the system and probably push for a proportional representation, but we shouldn't look at BN's results and say it's illegitimate or whatever, because even in GE14, there were many, many constituencies in which Pakatan Harapan benefited from split votes between PAS and UMNO. Right. Before we end this conversation, Kira, would you have a final message for us?
Well, number one, I hope that this Johor State election is an opportunity for everyone to reflect what we've done so far when it comes to voter mobilization, because I think the numbers are really, truly dismal. And I think the responsibility for voter turnout is on everyone, not just the NGOs or civil society. But of course, I think we should also not stop holding the EC accountable, because, you know, if we are consistently on down this path of like, of how they've done for the past state elections, we're going to be in real trouble when Undi Ikin and AVR voters come in full force during general elections. So we need to up our demands for accountability and at the same time figure out a way to collectively work together as a society to activate and mobilize voters to make a decision that they believe is the best for them.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Dashran.
That was Kira Yusri. She's the co-founder of Undi 18, sharing her perspectives on the Johor elections that took place last weekend. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcast from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.